We have two of the O's three children. We have Ariane, the eldest daughter. She is a twin, and she is the family peacekeeper. She's a people pleaser. And her younger sister, Marissa, is a wild child. We also have a character who looms over the entire story but emerges late in the story, his voice. His name is Kent, and he is a pedophile. And the fourth character is Ruth Fletcher. She is a character from the past who holds a secret that that affects all the lives of all these characters.
All right, so I'm just going to introduce the actors. Tavia Gilbert is Marissa. Therese Plummer is Ariane. Richard Ferroni, am I saying that right?
Ferrone.
Ferrone is Kent. And Cynthia Darlow is Ruth. So pull up the mic. You're going to need a mic. And we'll do it. This is from We Are Water by Wally Lamb.
I think Mama and Daddy will be okay with my decision once I tell them both. Get that part over with. I'm pretty sure Daddy won't have a problem with it. He didn't know his father, but he turned out fine. And yes, I'll explain to them if I have to. I am younger than most of the women who get pregnant this way. And maybe the right guy could still come along. But I don't want to keep playing the wait and hope game until I'm 40. What if my eggs are too old by then? The chances for birth defects are a lot greater for older moms. And yes, there's always adoption if you want to gamble on the genetic cocktail of two strangers. At least this way, I was able to read the donors' histories, weed out some of the potential for problems. It's not foolproof, I know that. And they pay these guys to do what they do. About $100, I've heard. So I guess they could lie on their forms if they needed the money. Well, I'm going to love this child no matter who he or she turns out to be. But being a single mother is going to be challenging enough without increasing the chances of raising a kid with special needs. The flight attendant comes by with her plastic bag, and we deposit our refuse. The ginger ale must have worked, I guess, because my stomach feels more settled. I give up on home from the hospital, and when I slip the book back in my bag, I see the red folder in there. Take it out. I'm not sure why I brought it with me, or for that matter, why I didn't shred what's in it once I made my decision. It's innocuous looking, though. As long as I hold it close to myself, neither of my seatmates will be able to read what's in there. The photocopied fact sheets of my prospective donors. For the millionth time, I look over the forms of the two I narrowed it down to. Should I have picked number 251 instead of number 311? Brown hair and eyes, 5'9", no history of cancer in his family, college educated, no alcohol or drug issues other than recreational use of marijuana, occasional. He was the one I thought I was going with. Then, at the last minute, I picked number 311 instead. Brazilian ethnicity. 2 years of college instead of four. A mother who died at 46. The reason listed isn't cancer or heart disease. Boating accident, it says. I look at the math I did in the margin of his fact sheet. He was only 13 when he lost her. Why did I change my mind? Was it because I felt sorry for him, this motherless boy who's now almost 30? But whatever the reason, it's a done deal. Number 311 has fathered the life that's growing inside me. This child I already love who will give me a purpose besides feeding the poor, and who will love me, no matter how much I weigh.
Very good. Beautiful. These actors are so great. Thank you.
They're letter perfect.
Unbelievable. I can't believe, as you wrote it.
I can't believe how lucky I am.
Okay, next is, you're going to be doing
Marissa. Yes.
Okay.
After the wine and drug kick in, I don't feel so scared anymore. Wasted. We start complaining about our lives, our respective careers. Why is it that in corporate America, the ones who wield the most power are the biggest douchebags? Brie asks. Kate Hudson, I say. She does movies, commercials, gets herself on Leno and Letterman, Access Hollywood. Why her? Why not me? Because your mother's not Goldie Hawn. No, my mother's an artiste. I say it as much to myself as to Brie. An edgy, lesbian artiste. Next weekend, I'm going to be in my mother's lesbian wedding. For some reason, this makes me laugh. I picture Mama working in her studio, surrounded by all that scary art she makes that rich people pay insane prices for. Like that piece she made out of ruined bridal gowns. How much did Gaga pay for that thing? And I can't even get acting work that pays scale? I ask Brie if she wants to see the bridesmaid's dress I'm wearing to the wedding. The black, strapless Stella McCartney that Vivica bought me when the two of us went shopping. But Brie just looks over at me vacantly like she's deaf or something. So yeah, she is wasted. Maybe if I showed her. I go into my bedroom, take the dress out of my closet and hold it up against myself in front of the mirror. I slip out of my shirt and jeans and put it on. Look in the mirror at the girl in the chic black dress with the black and blue face. One side puffed up like a fucking baseball glove. Maybe if I were my mother, I could rip the dress, stain it, and sell it as art. But I'm not Mama. I'm an out-of-work actor so desperate for a connection that I sold myself. Could have gotten myself killed. Then I'd be famous. Tristan McCabe's victim. I'd be like that blonde girl who got killed in the Caribbean on her school vacation, the one whose mother is on TV every 2 seconds. I can't get work, but that dead girl's mother has turned herself into a celebrity? Maybe I'm not cut out for this meat grinder of a business. Or maybe I am. Maybe if I stick it out, my big break will happen next month. Or even next week.
Another beautiful. It's Therese Plummer.
That was Tavia.
Tavia. Tavia. I have it long on my list here. Tavia Gilbert. Now, Richard Farrone. We'll do Richard next. As Kent.
Predator. Pedophile. Child molester. Yeah, you could call me any of those things. But don't forget victim. Because that's what came first. You think I was born this way? I wasn't. I got fucked up. Emotionally dysregulated, as the shrinks put it, the year I was 9. This one therapist in training who interviewed me last month, a grad student who was gathering data for some study she was doing about how pedophilia gets kick-started in childhood, she quizzed me for a couple of hours about how I became who I became. "Please be as candid and thorough as you can," she said. I told her some of it. The abridged version, let's say. You can never fully trust shrinks, no matter how sincere they seem. So you withhold, bullshit them, manipulate them a little for your own amusement. But those questions she kept lobbing at me brought it all back. So vividly that it was like I was reliving it. The trouble started after my father left my mother and me so that he could shack up with his girlfriend and her son, puny little Peter Clegg, who was in my class at school. It was confusing, you know? My dad was a mailman, and Peter's mother was the postmaster's secretary. That was how their little romance started. But at the time, I didn't get any of that. I just assumed that he had left because he liked Peter better than he liked me. What I couldn't figure out was why. Dad left us high and dry. I was in Cub Scouts, okay? 1 week Mom was a housewife and our den mother, and the next week she was a grocery clerk down at the First National. That was when I had to start taking the bus over to this woman Irma's house after school. Irma Cake. She was a foster mother, but she babysat other kids, too. Us after-school kids had to play down in the basement so we wouldn't wake the babies up from their naps or bother her while she was watching her stories on TV. Those babies all must have been heavy sleepers, I guess, because she'd have the volume up so loud that you could hear the television through the fucking floorboards. Time now for The Edge of Night. We were only allowed upstairs at snack time, or if we had to use the toilet. And if you needed to tell Irma something while you were up there, you had to wait for a commercial. Irma's daughter, Tawny, was in charge downstairs. To this day, I fantasize about running into Tawny Cake on the street somewhere and making her pay for the things she did. One time, when I was in prison, I woke up smiling from a dream where I'd just plunged a shiv into her heart.
Wow.
That's a tough part to
perform. That is a tough part to perform, and a tough part to write.
Yeah, you know, when one of my kids read the galley, I said, "What'd you think?" He said, "Well, Dad, I liked it, but it kind of creeped me out that my father nailed the pedophile so accurately."
I bet. Has that been a controversial thing in your book tour?
Yes, yeah.
Writing, you know, that particular part is written in the voice of the pedophile, of course.
And some people feel very uncomfortable when they're reading that part. But, you know, I'm not in this to make people feel comfortable.
Exactly.
Necessarily.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fascinating. And again, brave.
Yeah.
To write that. And we have one more, Cynthia Darlow as Ruth.
Two of the flood victims were waked at McPadden's last night, same as Claude. It was that young mother and her baby. Claude's coffin was laid out in the smaller room, theirs in the bigger one across the hall. Belinda Jean and I got to calling hours early, and when I looked in the other room and saw that baby's casket next to her mother's, it nearly broke my heart. Myrna O'Day, the woman's name was, but the paper said everyone called her Sunny because she had a sunny disposition. The baby's name was Grace. They found that poor doomed child's body tangled up in a tree that got knocked over. And this was a strange thing. They found the mother floating in the basement of McPadden's, of all places, where Claude's corpse was waiting to be waked and buried. It said in the paper that the printing company down the street from McPadden's had a lot of flood damage, too, and that the water was so powerful it moved two heavy printing presses from one side of the floor to the other. I suspect Claude got moved around some, too. I could see it in my mind. His coffin floating around down there like a boat with him in it. I didn't ask if that was the case, though, and Mr. McPadden didn't say. But at least Claude was in his coffin. Or so I chose to believe. Sunny O'Day. It just don't seem like a name you'd associate with tragedy. Her surviving children had their picture on the front page of the newspaper the day after it happened. Those two, plus a nephew who lives with the family. The photo was taken at the hospital after they got rescued from that tree they were in and had to be examined by the doctor. The boys, the son and the nephew, looked gloomy, and the little girl looked like she was in a daze. That poor child, 5 or 6 years old, and now she's got to grow up without a mother to guide her. That would have been Belinda Jean's fate, too, if Claude hadn't married me soon after his first wife died. He never said as much, but I know that was why Claude asked me for my hand. Not because he loved me and couldn't live without me, but so that I could mother Belinda Jean. I've done right by her, too. That's not pride, it's fact. I was thinking about something on the ride to the cemetery this morning. That Claude was a widower when he married me, and now I'm his widow.
Cynthia Darlow. You're all so amazing. Tavia Gilbert, Therese Plummer, Richard Ferrone, and Cynthia Darlow. Incredible voices and really beautifully acted. And I really, really thank you for being here because that is just astonishing work.
And on the audio, they're also joined by some other really wonderful actors/narrators. George Goodell, who is one of the grand masters of audiobooks. Eduardo
Ballerini,
and several others. They're just every.
You're all so amazing. Yeah. Really perfect. Yeah. Just incredible voices too. Amazing, and really lends itself to radio. I might add.